Hello and welcome to the Pastor Fury Audio Experience. I'm your host, Pastor Fury, and this is the especially curated audio podcast for all things Pastor Fury. Hope you enjoy today's episode. Didn't open it, sent it out.
Oh.
It was porn. It was porn.
Oh my goodness.
I sent porn out to about 75 people within our school district. Hey there, you guys. Welcome to episode 3 of Fury and Friends. I'm your host, Pastor Fury, with my co-host, Jariel Cosmano.
Hey, guys.
You guys, we got an awesome episode lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about some Star Wars, Shang-Chi, Hawkeye. We're going to get into some stuff about COVID. And there's going to be an interview, and I won't spoil who the interview's with. I'm just kidding. It's with me. We're going to get into my story today. I'm excited to let you guys in on a little bit more of my background and stuff. But before we get into all that deep stuff, let's have some fun talking about all the great stuff that Disney is bringing our way. Like, it really starting to feel like when we get into the entertainment section that we're really just like a Disney highlight reel.
Yeah, what else is going on?
Like, everybody else needs to step up their game because Disney is killing it right now. Yeah. So Shang-Chi, I keep having to correct my American brain because it was like kind of spelled out in the movie, right? Like it's Sean and then it's Shang. So anyways, so we saw it, you saw it, I saw it. What I wanted to get your thoughts first before I get in there. What did you think?
You know, I loved it. I think you and I spoke like maybe a week before I saw it, and you said Larissa said it was her number one.
Her number two.
And I was like, whoa, because there's a lot of Marvel movies. Yeah. But after seeing it, I didn't put it in my number two spot, but it is in my top five. It is so good. I loved it.
You know what? I totally would agree. Top five for me as well. I don't know. I don't even know if I can literally list out all of them, but like, I think both Larissa and I don't know if you as well, but your number one, Black Panther?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. So we're all in unanimous agreement on that. Black Panther is number one. But then Larissa said this was number two. Shang-Chi was number two to Black Panther. I think my number two might be Infinity War. Yours is Endgame? So for me, I think because Infinity War was... it felt super authentic in the fact that like the good guys didn't win. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
And it was the one that left you rocked. You know, and it was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You can't. So, you know, what rescued that for me from being a tragic moment was the moment when T'Challa died. Because I was like, this is fake. They're not gonna die. Because I knew hands down. That there was no way they were going to stay dead then. Because they did not just have the Black Panther film with all of its success to then only kill him in the film the next.
That's so true.
No way that's happening. So, okay, cool.
They're coming now.
Yeah. And I was shook before that. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay. No.
Yeah. See, Endgame was my second because the scene where like, it's just Captain America and Thanos, and then like the Falcon shows up and says on your left, and then all the circles open. I just get like so worked up every single time.
So that scene itself, I think is actually the best scene of all of Marvel so far.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I mean, so you've got Cap wielding Mjolnir, right? Oh. He's got Thor's hammer, which is like, whoa. He is worthy. And then the line that everybody who's been an Avengers fan has been waiting for is Avengers Assemble. It's like, oh, I'm getting goosebumps right now.
I love that part.
Yeah. So that scene. Yeah, I'll definitely give you that.
Yeah. But
But
Infinity Wars is number three for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where Endgame goes in my... I mean, maybe... because Winter Soldier, Captain America Winter Soldier's in that group for me.
That's actually a pretty good one.
I love that one because of the action. And actually, I think that's a good place for me to pivot back to Shang-Chi, because one of the things I loved about Captain America Winter Soldier is like... coming off of the first Cap, which was very slow story building, you know, there, because I thought that was a really slow film in the
Marvel. That's my least favorite.
It was, I was like, wow, this is really, you know, because you're at that point, you're used to all of the fighting.
Yes.
So when Captain America Winter Soldier came out, and it was like in the first few minutes, like they're getting off of this plane or whatever into the ship and like, boom, boom, boom. I was like, yes. And then, you know, the trailers showing the Winter Soldier, you know, Bucky's character was like so like mysterious and like he looks hardcore and like, whoa. You
didn't really know who he was.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this is dope. But like back to the movie that we're actually supposed to be talking about. Before this comes like an anthology of all of Marvel. with Shang-Chi, the bus scene, like that bus scene for me was like, oh man, y'all came out like in the first handful of minutes.
Exactly.
Like, yeah,
it didn't waste any time, and I loved it. It was action-packed from like start to finish, and what I liked about it is it was a completely different type of storyline. It was like almost like a fantasy world almost. It was so good. And those slow motion fight scenes between him and its wife. Oh,
that it was super dope. There was a lot of like genres being represented in this film and blended together. Like, so first of all, that bus scene, like it was for me, it felt very like, I don't want to even say classic Kung Fu, because that was very much like Jackie Chan. Like that was like a Jackie Chan Kung Fu movie right there.
Yes.
Like with the jacket coming off and using that as a weapon and like using something like that was so Jackie Chan for me, and I loved it. And then the fight scene you mentioned with him and his wife, that was like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
Like that kind of fight scene was like slow motion and like all this weird mystical stuff going on.
Yes.
And when Larissa saw it first, she was like, oh, that's like Matrix. And I was like, yeah, but in the Kung Fu world, that's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon right there. Because that was when, you know, that was like the first time you kind of saw that, you know, blending of the high tech super or the special effects with the Kung Fu genre, really, in a big way. Now, I didn't really love that movie, but I love the effects of that.
Exactly. You know? And, you know, how could we forget Trevor, the star of the movie?
He was hilarious. He was so funny.
I love that guy. I'm just like, yes, bring him back every time. I love Trevor.
And did you see the short before the movie, Hail the King?
I did, only because you told me to watch it.
Right, which is the thing that just blows me away, that they didn't make a bigger deal of that.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even like promoted like on their big featured panel, you know?
No one I talked to knows about this thing.
Right. And like, it sets it up so well and it makes more sense. It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah, because at first it's like, what is he doing here?
Yeah, right. How does he
watch that? You know why he's there. Yeah. And actually that short. Yeah, the short was really good.
Yeah. And it was funny and like, yeah, it totally, and it's not long, you know?
No.
It felt like an extended end credit scene, you know?
Yes, it did. It did. Yeah.
And I think one more thing that I would definitely say about, there's actually two more. So one of the things that I really loved about it was its addition of humor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think always helps those movies for me. So like one that wasn't like funny was like a Winter Soldier. That wasn't really like funny. Cap wasn't really funny. But like Guardians of the Galaxy was like hilarious.
Hilarious. You know? Thor Ragnarok.
yeah, exactly. It's like these oh man, they're really hitting it with the comedy. And that was one of the things that I thought was refreshing, you know, in this one as well. One of the things that I that I thought was really cool, that I loved, that they kind of seemed to follow the same model, if you will, yeah, of Black Panther, in that it's kind of a subgenre film. Well, this one definitely is a subgenre film, where it's a kung fu movie.
Yeah.
But they also take the chance that they took with Black Panther as well, where they went strictly minority cast almost.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. So like with Black Panther, it was like you had an all black cast, and then whatever that FBI agent's name was. I don't remember the dude who's in The Hobbit.
Yeah. I can't think of his name in the movie.
I can't remember his name.
But I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a great addition, so I love that. And then you had, in the same way, an all Asian cast here.
Yeah.
And then Trevor, right? Trevor. Or Trevor and Mr. Laser Fist or Sword Fist or whatever his name
was.
Oh,
yeah. That guy had a nice weapon. But
So that was, I got to remember his name because it's on his car. That's going to bother. Was it like Razor Fist or something? I don't remember.
On his car.
But I thought it was a risky move going so subgenre and so like niche, and not even doing what they did. The thing that they did great with Black Panther was that they introduced Black Panther a couple movies before, and then they introduced him again, and each one of those like cameos was like epic, and it was like, whoa, he's hardcore.
Yeah,
no one has seen anything from anybody other than Trevor in any of the films, you know, and then you barely make the connection between those.
Yeah,
so I was like worried that was not gonna be enough to get people out, but now you make a quality product and word of mouth, and it blew away the box office.
You know? It was, even if you don't see that short, it was still a great Marvel movie, and it was enough. I think Trevor was just enough to tie it all together. It's like, I don't need anything else. I'm fine with Trevor.
Yeah. And I know for some people, so I love Trevor. I love the weird faceless little creature.
Yeah.
But I also enjoyed Awkwafina. And I know for some people, like, she's a polarizing actress where they're like, I don't know.
Yes.
But I really appreciated her. And I was impressed with her because I thought she played it way straighter than I imagined that she would, because everything else I've seen her in, she's like way over the top. You know, like her character in Crazy Rich Asians was like the most, you know what I mean? And this was the same director. That movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I heard that somewhere. We'll put a correction on the screen if I'm wrong. But you know, and that makes sense too, because that was like an all Asian cast there. So it makes sense that they would get somebody that, you know, has done that sort of thing quality wise. But I don't know. I really loved it. I don't know if there's anything else you want to share about it before we move on.
No, just that I loved it and everyone needs to see it.
When this comes out, the night that this episode is going to drop, Larissa and I are actually watching it again. So we decided, because she was watching some interviews and she's like, she just texted me out of the blue at work. She's like, man, I really want to see it again. I was like, me too. When do you want to go? Like,
you want to go now?
Yeah. Oh,
you know what we didn't talk about? Is it Juan? What is his name?
Oh, Wong!
Wong!
What's his name? Wong! Yeah. So he did a great job of bringing in the and then like bridging towards the future, right?
Yes. I loved how he was fighting when they got there to the little fight.
Somebody told me that's supposed to be Abomination. Oh. Which is a character from like the Hulk universe, one of the villains in that. And I didn't verify this, but somebody told me that the voice of Abomination in Shang-Chi was Ed Norton, who played Hulk in the MCU.
That's really
Hulk
cool.
Before,
that's really,
you know,
cool.
Iron Man release. So I should have looked into that to really see if that was really true, but I thought that was a really cool story, and how they're trying to bring, you know, Hulk's storyline kind of into that a little bit.
Yeah.
But I love with bringing Wong there, it also gives us the opportunity that maybe he's going to show up in like even Spider-Man or Doctor Strange 2 with the Multiverse of Madness or something like that, whatever it's called.
Liked it because I'm like, I didn't really know where the MCU was going to go after Endgame, but I'm super excited about everything that's coming out. Yeah.
So speaking of everything that's coming out, we just recently had the drop of a new trailer. Yeah. Hawkeye. Man, that looks so epic to me. And it's another one of those where it looks like they're bringing humor into the storyline to fill that out. What was something that you thought was especially intriguing or exciting about that trailer?
Well, I love that it's like Christmas time. I love Christmas movies. It kind of gave me like a Die Hard feel when I was watching it.
Somebody else I saw saying the same thing on Twitter. Yes. They're like, oh, now let's start the debates on whether or not this is a Christmas movie, just like with Die Hard.
Die Hard is a Christmas
movie. See, and I'm on the other side of that. I would say Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. Like, because it's set at Christmas, I don't, you know. But then again, people are like, oh, but like, you know, he's like, ho, 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 and this and that. And like, you're stretching. But this one, however, this one looks like Christmas may be more heavily integrated into the story. So maybe you can get away with calling this one. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks really exciting because I'm excited to see, I think her name is Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah, I'm a fan of hers.
Yeah, how she became basically who he was.
Yeah, yeah. So she's playing Kate Bishop, which is basically like his understudy, if you will.
Yeah.
She, I think the storyline from, and I don't know if how much they're going to stick to this, but I want to say the storyline from the comics was that she was a well-to-do young lady who gets like attacked. And then after that attack decides that she wants to train on how to defend herself better. And Hawkeye becomes like one of her heroes that she looks to. And, you know, when she then meets him and she then like learns from him and eventually she becomes part of the Young Avengers. That's what I believe the storyline is in the actual comic book world. Okay. I don't know what they're going to do here.
Yeah.
But I don't really have too many like young actresses that I'm like really like, I really enjoy, but I've dug her in everything that I've seen her in.
Yeah.
There's something about the way that she plays the roles that I think is really intriguing and just draws
me. I haven't seen her in anything other than Transformers.
So she was in that, but then there was one that I hadn't planned on watching, but it's a hard thing for me, Layla and Larissa. And Layla, for you guys who don't know, is my 16-year-old daughter. So it's something that's hard for my wife and I and her to come together to watch a movie where we all would enjoy it. And there was one movie called Edge of 17. Usually when we find a movie, it's usually one where the main character's in high school, but the themes are a bit more mature that is like where we can kind of come together. And that was what this one was. And she played this kind of awkward, but like edgy teen.
Yeah.
And it just follows her journey. And there's like some like, oh, I don't know if we should be watching this right now, Layla, type of stuff, you know. But I think the moments that were like, were redeemed by the moral of the story, the place where they were getting, I was like, this is actually really good. It was a touching film. So
That's cool.
So I really appreciate her. But you know, when they were talking about this movie or this show coming out, they did some little fan-made trailers that confused me and made me think that Hawkeye's trailer was out, because they took pieces of a movie that Hailee Steinfeld did with Samuel L. Jackson.
Really?
Yeah. And it was so cool because she was playing like this young secret agent And okay. he was like the one who was in charge of the secret agency or whatever. Oh, wow. And it was like a cheesy movie, like super yeah. like B movie. And but people chopped up bits of that and made it look like, because it's like, oh, this looks like the MCU here, you know, because exactly. you got Fury and you got them. Kate Bishop. Like.
Yeah, I love fans.
Yeah, yeah, people get creative, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I'm really looking forward to that movie. And I think the highlight for me, and they should really like release this as a full project, is the Rogers musical.
That was so funny.
That looks amazing. Like no, but you could legit like make real money with that.
Oh, it would sell out all the time. And absolutely. I would will see it multiple times.
Yeah. So like, I think if they weren't already planning this based yeah. on the reactions I'm sure they're going to get, yeah. they should just like realize this is a moneymaker. Exactly. This is something that people are going to love. Let's just give them yeah. what they want.
It's just another avenue for them to make money.
Why not? Why yeah. not? I mean, I think Hamilton just won more Emmys, you know, from Disney Plus. So. Wow.
And yeah, they could shoot it and put it on Disney Plus like Hamilton. That was
yeah. Easy. No brainer. Like right. you literally already created the concept. So just flesh out the story. Like that's what y'all do.
Exactly.
Oh gosh. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And that comes out in what? November?
November 24th.
Yeah. That'll be good. So speaking of things that are coming out soon, we've got Star Wars Visions. I want to say that, is that the 22nd of this month?
Did we? Yes. Yes.
So that's where it begins. And I have never been a big anime fan, but for those who don't know, this is the, this is basically them giving all of these anime studios a shot at telling some Star Wars stories, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think really excites me about it is that it, unlike some of the stories that I've seen animated, like Bad Batch and Clone Wars, there's less opportunity for filler stuff. Yeah. So like what I've liked about What If, and we'll talk about that more later in another episode. What I liked about What If is that each episode they were trying to complete a story arc, yeah. you know, and tell you a full thing. And they weren't just like doing this long drawn out thing. So that's what I think I'm getting out of Star Wars Visions. What did you think of it, or the trailer at least?
Yeah, I think that's how it's gonna be too. I'm not really that into anime either. I mean, I like it, but I don't watch it that often. Yeah. I was recently watching Beyblade.
What?
Yeah, my son.
Beyblade?
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
You don't know the little, they're like spinning tops, but they battle. It's a whole thing.
Okay, okay.
Have arenas. But they have an anime cartoon. I think that's really what it's based on.
Okay.
One day I watched an entire season, and this is like 22
episodes. In one day you watched the whole season?
Yeah. My son was here and he's watching it, and I'm like, why am I watching this? And then by the end, I'm like, quiet. I need to know what's going on.
That is excellent.
And what I like about anime is this, it's kind of like over exaggerated and it's so over the top. It's fun. So I just like that they're doing it on the Star Wars spin. I think I'll enjoy that more so than, like you said, Bad Batch and Clone Wars, even though that's like a complete story, but it's kind of just an extension of the original tale. When I think they could just do so much more with this one.
Yeah, yeah. And even with Bad Batch right now, they still haven't even completed the story.
Yeah.
Like they're still telling the story of what exactly? I don't even really know. We'll get to that. But this drew me in immediately, I think, because like one of the opening scenes of the trailer, they show like somebody handing this box. So first of all, while I might not be big into anime, I'm big into samurai culture.
Yeah.
Like The Last Samurai is one of my favorite movies with Tom Cruise. Yeah. And like I have samurai swords in my garage and like I'm a knife collector, which that's a whole nother conversation. But like when they're handing them this box that looks like, you know, a samurai sword, but then you open it up and it's like the saber handle. I was like,
yeah.
I'm that like, that's cool. Brilliant. Yes, this totally fits. Like, you know, and I even saw like some behind the scenes of the making of the last season of The Mandalorian. And when they were doing some of the scene fight scenes and trying to train up Rosario Dawson on how to be Ahsoka, they were saying how they were taking cues from samurais and like how the samurais fight and everything, but they were trying to be a little bit more fluid.
Okay.
As opposed to their like, you know,
yeah.
I was like, see, it is so very, you know, influenced by samurai culture.
Yeah.
And then, so there was that. And then when they did the bit that clearly looked like Voltron, styled anime, yeah. I was like, yes,
I know,
that's my history right there, baby.
Right, it's like totally 80s.
Yeah. And then they even have one that looks like Pokemon. I'm like, okay, that yeah. would that'd be interesting. I feel like that's gonna be one, the one that's probably gonna drag for me.
I don't know, that Beyblade got me.
okay. But I think that's what's going to be so cool about it too, because I'm a guy that really loves diversity. And that's one of the things that yeah. I love about this show, for instance, that we talk about so many different things.
Yeah.
That this one is going to, you know, each episode, basically, I think there's 9 different stories, but they're told by like 7 different anime studios.
I love that.
You know, so it's a different flavor.
Yeah. Each
episode, I'm like, oh, that's so dope. Yeah. That's so dope. I think
they're going to get a whole different fan base with this thing.
Absolutely. Because there's going to be people that could care less about Star Wars.
Oh, but yeah.
Love anime. They're yes. going to come on over.
Yes, exactly. Like,
welcome home. Welcome home. We've been waiting yes. for you.
Yeah. Disney knows exactly what they're doing.
They do. Yeah. That's why I was happy to go ahead and invest in them over yeah. this quarantine. Wise time. Like, yeah. They bought some of Fox. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'll come along for the journey. Yeah. Yeah. So during COVID, there were some things that came out of there that were positives where I was able to start investing in Disney, but clearly. It has been a significant trial
yeah.
for the world,
yeah.
Global pandemic. One of the things that I actually spent some time with my co-host of the Good Dad, Bad Dad podcast recently talking about was our own personal experiences with COVID and precautions versus, you know, some of the theories out there about vaccine, yeah. not vaccine, mask, not mask. And it's been so polarizing and controversial yeah. and yeah. gosh, just like landmines everywhere you go
with
this conversation, you know. But in the episode, he and I was really mostly listening to him share his story because he just recently contracted COVID. Yeah. And he shared a bit about his journey and, you know, we'll link to a bit of that in the notes if you really want to hear that full story. But I think that this is a good opportunity for us to really share some of our stories, you know, about what COVID has been like for us and kind of how it's maybe hit home. I don't know if it's something that you want to go first with and share a little bit about what's been hard for you in it or, you know, maybe some personal interactions that you've had with it, maybe related to your family or anything yeah. like that, whatever you feel yeah. might be good to share.
Yeah, I haven't had, thank God, no one in my immediate home has had COVID.
Yeah.
At least that we know of.
right. And that's so one of the difficulties is like,
yeah.
you could be asymptomatic, you know? Yeah.
And I think that's honestly what's been the most frustrating because yeah. you know, when it first started, it was kind of like, oh, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to be in our houses for a month or two. And that for me was exciting. I'm like, oh, a break. I was right. Like, needed it. I had actually recently just been diagnosed with Bell's palsy. So The whole right side of my face was drooping and I'm like, perfect. No one sees me like this.
Right.
But then as it got, you know, started going on and it got more and more serious, one of my best friends got it. Like she was in the hospital. One of my aunts got it. She was in the hospital. And then here we are a year later and it's still something that we're dealing with. But then we don't really know a whole lot more than we did then. We know, like, yes, we need to wear masks and now we have a vaccine, but it's still like, you don't know what it's going to do until you get it. And that's what's kind of like freaky and has you on edge, really, because you don't know. It could affect you. No, you don't have any symptoms, but the next person, they could pass away. So I think it's the uncertainty. And I think that's why it's so polarizing, because a lot of people, they're scared. They just don't know what to do.
And so you just hit it right there. The fear is, I think, the thing that I feel like the devil has just run wild with fear. And it's not even the same fear for everybody. There's like so many places where fear is interacting with us and our journey here, where there's the fear of contracting it, right? The fear of what it will do to you. And, you know, are you going to die from it? You know, is it going to have long lasting impact on you negatively? The fear of it being someone close to you that gets it, and, you know, parents and the fear of their children, or, you know, adult kids and the fear of their elderly parents, you know, getting it, and, you know, all of those types of fears, you know, on one side of it. And then you've got the other folks who are looking at it in a different light and seeing it all as, you know, conspiracy and false. And like, then there's the fear of government and the fear of, you know, the mass media lying to you, and they're trying to deceive us. And, you know, so there's all of those fears about what someone behind the scenes is trying to do to disrupt my, like the fear of people taking away my freedom. And, you know, so there's all of those fears. And then if you decide to get the vaccine, there's the fear of what the vaccine will do to you. And like, what are the impacts of that? And like, how it's going to interact with me. And is it actually going to prevent the vaccine? And, you know, all of that stuff. And then, you know, there's the other, even other versions of the fears of the vaccine over, like, you know, are there spiritual implications of me getting this vaccine? And I'm afraid that this is the mark of the beast. And I'm afraid that, you know, like, there's fear is just swirling.
Yeah.
Like, it's like one big, like, stew of just fears. And I feel like the great challenge for us specifically in the church is like to not allow any of those fears any way to be the thing that's driving our decision making.
Exactly.
And like being the reason we do X, Y, or Z. And like, that's hard in this season. That's
super hard. Even as a believer, you're like, you know that there's an ultimate plan, but it's just like, we're just bombarded with fear. And the consequences of the fear of others too.
Absolutely. I mean, even the wearing the mask, like there's the fear of, oh, someone who's walking by me and like, and like, oh, I got
exactly,
you know, like,
And like, but you guys mentioned in your podcast, just like, I have like allergies, but just the fear of every time I have something going on, it's like, oh my goodness, do I have COVID? I gotta go get a COVID.
Right.
So now I have a cabinet full of just the little at home ones. I don't know.
You have a cabinet full of them?
Yeah, because I'm like, I can't keep running to CVS. They're going to be like, ma'am, you have a problem.
That is hilarious. So I know where I'm going. No, you're like, don't come over here.
If you can't come out of, I'll slide you one through the door. If you can't find one in the store.
You got to probably got a cabinet where it's like all of these tests next to a bunch of masks and toilet paper.
My COVID drawer. And honestly, I have a stash in the basement. I was hoarding. I was one of those COVID hoarders. I've got any type of disinfectant, cleaning supplies, gloves, masks that you could ever want. So there was just like this. It was causing like mass hysteria.
Like, and that's people responding to the fear.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm afraid. Yeah. And so that man, fear in so many different ways in our world is what jacks us up, you know? Mm-hmm. It causes us to strike out, to lash out at people in ways that we would normally not, because we're all in this like, you know? And so for me, what I've been really feeling like the Lord just keeps calling me back to, that I need his spirit on a daily, minute by minute basis even, is so like, what would love do in this moment? Cause you know what fear would have you do. Like fear would have you run to go do this, run to go do that, or yell out about this or da, da, da. But what would love look like in this situation?
Yeah.
You know, and those are the things that I gotta like keep trying to remember, like, okay. So, and the actions themselves, like it still may look like wearing your mask and getting a vaccine or not it for some folks. I don't know. Yeah, exactly. But like, if it's a decision that you're making because you feel compelled by love, then I feel like that's one that I have greater confidence is something that the Lord is actually behind and supported versus one that's fueled by our fears, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. So we're ready for our interview portion of our show. And as you mentioned earlier, we're going to be interviewing you, Pastor Fury. So I think most people know that you're a husband and a father and a pastor, but you know, they don't know your whole story. So how about you tell us a little bit about your freedom story? Like, how did you start on this journey with Christ?
So for like the first 18 years of my life, growing up, I was a kid who just really felt like a fish out of water. We came from Michigan when I was 7, moved into Chicago, I turned 8, and we moved to the south suburbs. So we were in the city for maybe about 8 months. My grandfather passed away, and we moved to the south suburbs with my mom and my dad and my grandmother. Little did I know that that move was actually my mom trying to escape from my father in a way.
Okay.
I wouldn't say escape, but she was deciding that, you know what, this isn't working out great right now. I need to go closer to home, which was Chicago for her. His family was in Michigan. And if you want to come, fine. But this is where I need to be.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, they got divorced. And that was the first thing that kind of sent my whole world into a tailspin. And I was struck with, now we moved into the south suburbs in this little all-white village called South Holland. It was all white at the time.
Yeah.
And like the opposite now. When we moved there, we were like the first Black family basically there in this little village. So it was me in like an all-white school basically. And I was just trying to find ways to fit in, you know, and it was awkward for me. I was struggling, you know, kind of engaging with the culture, and I didn't really know how to fit in. And then soon thereafter, more Black families would come in. But now I'm like acclimating to this all white culture, and they're coming in really more embracing the Black culture. And now they're looking at me like,
what's going on?
Who are you? Yeah. Like, yeah. You're not Black. What are you? I'm like, wait, hold up. Time out. So I'm not white and I'm not Black?
Yeah.
Like, how does that work? So I never really felt like I had a people. And when my father moved out of the house, I really was struggling with what it meant to be me. Like, who was I? I really dealt with acceptance issues, feeling like, you know, the cliche, is this my fault that my parents got divorced? Did I do something? Like, is it because of, you know, the way that I behaved? And then I started internalizing the behaviors of myself and my brothers as reasons why that happened. And if we could be good, then, you know, things would be better in our family. Like, so I was like putting on my shoulders the weight of being the good kid.
And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like eight-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah.
So that was definitely a lot of pressure. And I was a good student, but I was, my motivation in all of that was, I want to be flawless. I want to be perfect, so that not only, you know, would things be better in my household, but like, I was looking at my mom, who was really struggling after the divorce, and she was kind of crumbling, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to make my mama happy. And my older brother was really acting out in school, and my younger brother was really acting out at home. And I was just like, okay, I'm the middle kid.
Yep.
I'm going to be the good one, you know? And that was my mantra growing up. And I realized two things that I always wanted to be true. One, that I would never get divorced.
Right.
Because I knew what that did to my family.
Yeah.
And two, that I was going to be a better father than my own father.
Yeah.
Now, my dad and I right now, like, we're in a great place. Like, I was just talking to him the other day, as he just had a birthday not too long ago. And actually, he just called me the other day to say he had some clothes for me. And I'm like, Dad, I love you, but your fashion and mine. But back then, when he left the home, it was very sporadic visits. He would tell us that he was going to meet us and pick us up and wouldn't show up.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of empty promises. And it really taught me, unfortunately, don't expect anything from anybody. You're just setting yourself up for disappointment. So so that was my journey. Those agreements were the things that I carried with me on into college life and everything. But in college, I deep dove. I was a good kid all through the first 18 years.
Yeah.
And then now I'm like, I'm away from home. Mama doesn't see me, so she can't be disappointed as long as I bring home them grades.
Exactly.
Even though I got on academic probation the first semester, because I didn't realize that I wasn't able to do those both well.
Yeah.
But so I went deep diving into drinking and partying and girls. Like, I didn't even really date in high school. I had like one girlfriend for a minute.
Yeah.
And I ended up having panic attacks. I skipped over a lot of stuff in there, but I had what, two panic attacks in high school.
Wow.
And the last one, I ended up in the hospital in the psych ward.
Oh, no.
And they've got me on antidepressants and, you know, trying to diagnose me with like manic depression and all of this like deep stuff. And I got a phone call from my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and at that time, it wasn't like we were really boyfriend and girl. It was like we would meet each other at the locker. And, you know, like, that was really it. We didn't know anywhere. But she called me up. And so because there wasn't a serious connection, she was like, yeah, it's over. So that's the one phone call that wasn't from my family that I received while I was in the hospital was being broken up with.
Oh,
so that was fun.
Okay.
I've never really told that story anywhere before. It's, so it's now we got it on wax. yeah. So, but going into, you know, college and everything, I was at this point trying to, I don't know, just see the way that the other side of the world lived with the loose living and all that. And I thought I was so smart that I could, you know, I can do this and do that. And I managed to get by, you know, I straightened up my act after the first semester, landed on my third major, which was finally English education, going from political science, history major, and then English education, because I was like, that's easy. Like, I do that. I communicate. I like this. I've grown up with kids. I'll do that. So I end up meeting this girl. I'm with her for 3 of my 4 years. And then when I graduate, I moved up here with her because we were in the south suburbs, right? Okay. But she lived up in the Zion Winthrop Harbor area. So I ended up moving in with her. This whole time, mind you, I haven't mentioned much of my faith at this point. We grew up going to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
I had a grandmother who, she was this sweet yet firm, sweet old lady that would be sitting on her lazy boy in the home because she lived with us. Really, we lived with her. It was her home.
Yeah.
And she had this long belt that had tassels on the end, and she'd be sitting there listening to gospel music, playing her crossword puzzle, and if we got out of line, like Indiana Jones on us. And that was my grandma, and loved her dearly, and she was the voice of like the gospel in our lives, and was always like pointing us back to Jesus. And you know, and I, you know, was in the church. I was even an acolyte where I would light the light, you know, the candles and stuff on a Sunday.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't know who Jesus was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I knew the stories.
Yeah.
Because I went to Sunday school, even vacation Bible school. We talked about that with you, right?
Yeah.
Juice and cookies.
Just there for the snacks.
Yeah. But like, and I even had my own Bible, you know, with my name inscribed on it, but I never read it.
Yeah.
And I never, clearly never lived according to it, you know, but I always was trying to be good for different motivations, you know, not because the Spirit of God was in me and leading me.
Yeah.
So now at this point, I would be the one who would talk about like spirituality and I know who Jesus is, but like I was the master of my own journey. You know what I mean? Like, I'm smart. I got this. I have surpassed whatever this rudimentary thing was y'all were doing. And thought I had it all together. And I brought that same understanding with me into living with my ex. Shortly after that, we got engaged. So we were 6 months away from being married. And I realized that I didn't love her.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what love was. But as I was looking back at one of the two things that I said was, I'm never getting divorced.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, is she the one? Like, are you going to live with her for the rest of your life? And I was like, man, she's been with me for like 5 years now. So
yeah,
I should, right? So I proposed. But then I started like meeting new friends at my new teaching job up here. And I started realizing, oh man, there's like a whole life that I've yet to really live.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to go and do things that I wanted to do. So I just was like, no, this isn't what I want for the rest of my life. So like one of the hardest days of my life, and it's embarrassing to share. But like, I remember it was a teacher institute day and I called in sick that day and I went home and I packed up all of my stuff in a U-Haul and I waited for her to come home.
Oh.
It was bad. It was a really bad scene because I didn't know what would happen if I just like had a conversation with her and then still had to like live there.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't know how that would go.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. It was really bad scene. Like there was kicking, screaming, all of that stuff. And then I began to try to figure out life again. But like, we'll fast forward, you know, now I meet Larissa, my actual wife, like a year and a half later, and was not, at that point I was like, I am not trying to do any real relationship stuff, because I like, I'm not trying to get messed up like that again, like just out here having fun. But I met her at a bar, and that was back, so that year and a half in between there, like that was the wildest year and a half of my life.
Party time.
Yeah, because when I shared about the college days, really all of the partying and all that stuff was my freshman year.
Okay.
Because when I met her, my ex, like it was like lockdown. Okay. Like I had my own sort of like quarantine with her. And honestly, she's the reason why I graduated college. Because had I not met her, I don't know that I would have actually made it through my classes. Because I was just too busy partying. Yeah. So Jay, if you're listening, thank you. Sorry again. Sorry. So anyways, I am now like in this wild party mode of like just being super, super, you know, prodigal son type journey.
Yeah.
And I meet her, and there was just something about her, and I just could not not be with her. Like I was just like, and she was here on a work visa. So Larissa was born in Honduras. Her mom's 100% Honduran, and her dad's 100% Roman from Italy. Born in Honduras, but then grew up in Italy, and then would spend summers in Honduras. And so she was coming from Italy on a work visa for this travel agency that she still works for today. So she's been there like 20 years. Now she runs it. She literally runs the agency. And she was here just for a year at that point. They brought in people that were authentic to the travel that they were trying to sell. They specialize in European trips, and specifically Italy. And so when I met her, there was this, oh man, you're just unique. You are a different animal than all these other girls that I ended up running into, you know? So I don't know, I was just drawn to her immediately. And she gave me the 2 days where she wasn't gonna call me. She would not give me her number. And I gave her my number, and she called me 2 days later. And then she left a voicemail with her number on there because I didn't answer, which I thought was hilarious. Because I'm like, real talk, what do you know now that you didn't know 2 days ago about me? You know what I mean?
Like, it's a test.
she admitted that she was just playing the game. That was what her roommate had told her. Yes. You got to do the 2 days or whatever.
Exactly.
So anyways, but ever since I called her back, like we talked every day after that.
Cool.
And I wasn't ready to get married, but I was definitely not ready to let her go back. And she was going to have to go back to Italy. So about a year and a half later, we ended up getting married.
Oh, wow.
And we went to Vegas. We flew to Vegas, got married in Vegas. Crazy story.
Oh.
While in Vegas, so we got married right after Elvis. Elvis did not marry us. Okay. But it was in the Viva Las Vegas chapel.
Oh, wow.
And the people right in front of us had Elvis marry them. But they have people there that are your witnesses that will sign. There was another girl that I kind of dated before Larissa that was the closest thing to a girlfriend. I told her that we were never boyfriend and girlfriend, but she was, you know, her name is the same name, first and last, as the witness that's on our marriage certificate.
Oh, that's crazy.
And we didn't notice it until we're on the plane back from Vegas. I was like, hey, did you see this? So anyways, so we get married, and man, I'm taking a long time. I said this is gonna be a condensed version, but this is like so we're married, and I'm still a very broken man, still far from the Lord. And I was DJing, beginning a DJing side job at the time, full-time teaching, DJing inside on the weekend. And it didn't take but a week before I was already unfaithful to my wife. Mm. And that like just set the tone of the next probably 3 or 4 years of our marriage, of me trying to be faithful, trying to, you know, have a solid marriage, but like still being so lost and so broken and still looking for acceptance and identity, not knowing who I was. And my struggle throughout all of my years, ever since I think the day that my parents got divorced, was me working to try and please people and try and be who they wanted me to be in that moment so that I would keep them in my life. That was what my subconscious was telling me there. So I became a chameleon. That was a part of why I was so messed up and broken all throughout college, because I renamed myself when I went off to college. I literally gave myself a nickname and it stuck all through college. I was the bomb. Wow. I was the bomb. That's literally what my nickname was. I painted a mushroom cloud mural outside of my dorm room. Like, I'm going to tag some people from my college days that can totally jump in the comments and attest to this. I had that. And the name of our floor, we were the third floor of this. It was called DEFCON 3.
Yeah.
And I had this big mushroom cloud mural outside of my room, and I was the bomb. And everybody called me the bomb. I was a radio personality and our school's DJ. And like, it was ridiculous. I was this other version for so long. And I was like, nope, rebranding. Here I am, you know? and what that then ended up meaning, though, was like, I wanted to stay up here in everyone's eyes. Yeah. So when this group wanted to do that thing, okay, got you. You know, oh, y'all want to do this thing? And it almost didn't really matter what it was that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I was going to be down because I wanted everyone to see me as the bomb. You know what I mean?
Definitely been there.
Life for the party is what I thought.
Yes.
But really, like, I was like the death in the party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people didn't realize it at the time because we were all dead, spiritually dead, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm going through now my days teaching at a school in Gurnee. I ended up getting fired from there because I being the life of the party, started this social network essentially in our school. It started off with just the first year teachers.
Yeah.
I called it the Woodland Youngins. And then it extended to second year and third year, and basically then it became this newsletter that I would send out, this mail group of all the people that wanted to be in the know on the social life within the middle school. And people would send me events that are happening, and I would send it out, let everybody know, yada yada, what's going on. I got an email one day from one of our guys. He's like, hey man, make sure the right people see this. I was like, cool. Didn't open it, sent it out.
Oh.
It was porn.
Oh no.
It was porn.
Oh my goodness.
I sent porn out to about 75 people within our school district.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they had to let me go.
Hands were tied.
Yeah, like, and I was not mad about it. Like, I got it. Like,
you
don't keep your job. You don't do that. So
exactly.
They gave me a letter of recommendation because they're like, yo, you've been amazing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, had I opened this clearly, I would not have sent this out. Like,
exactly.
So, yeah. So anyways, I got to let go from there. I started working at Waukegan High School. That was when we had Layla. And that was when things got really, really hard. Because I did not know how to balance fatherhood and everything else in life. And you know, you got kids. It's a life-changing experience when you're suddenly a parent.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, wait a minute. Like, the me time, that's gone. Like, wait, what is me time now?
I hope you enjoyed your me time.
Yeah, yeah. So I went deep into depression. And I, for a little bit, turned back to drinking. But that was really hard because, I really couldn't do that and still function. And then turns out, same guy who sent me the email, turned me on to weed. And got me high for my first time. And then I met some people at the school who also smoked, and they invited me over, and then that became my escape.
Okay.
And by the end of my first year of teaching, like every day as I was leaving the building, I was smoking up before I got home. I was driving and getting high. And then that was going on. You know, and I'm like high picking up my daughter and watching her. And I mean, basically every waking moment that I wasn't in school, because I wasn't getting high before work.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've still got, I'm sure, some sort of, you know, marijuana hangover or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know what you would call that.
Not functioning at 100%.
Yeah, no, not really, you know. And I stopped grading papers and doing lesson plans. I was just kind of, and the culture of the school at that time didn't weed me out. Yeah. It was like, hey, you're great. Like my personality, you know what I mean? Like I say the right things. I always interview well. Like, you know what I mean? Like I walk into the room and I've got a lesson. You know what I mean? And it's like,
you know how to give people what they wanted.
Exactly. Because that's what I had gotten good at for years. Yeah. Until the fourth year there, I had a new evaluator who was new to the building, and she actually was doing the job of like looking at my lesson plans and the way that I'm teaching and trying to determine whether or not to give me tenure. Oh. And she's just like, yeah, I don't think we can rehire you. And I got it, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I knew in my second year that I should be let go because I was no longer really doing the job. I was just showing up, going through the motions.
Yeah.
Cashing the check.
Yeah.
You know, and it was destroying me because I actually cared about the kids.
Yeah.
But I was so broken. You know, I did not have what it took to do what I needed to do then. And knowing that was just making me more depressed, you know, because like when you're walking through life as a shell of what you know you should be, it does a thing to you that just makes you feel like
it makes you feel awful. Like, wow. Yeah.
It's what, like, you know what I mean? What's the point? You know?
Yeah.
And so when they let me go, I was just about to turn 30. And I remember that was when I was just questioning everything. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're 29, about to turn 30. You've been fired from two jobs in 4 years. You're high every day.
Yeah.
You're cheating on your wife. You're a horrible father in that regard because you're high all the time. And so I was like looking at my life and I'm like, oh, you're the smart guy. Remember, you're that brilliant guy who could do all this. And What is this?
No.
How is this your story? Okay. And so I didn't know what to do differently. I didn't know how to fix it, but I knew this was a broken mess. And honestly, I was ready to throw in the towel.
Yeah.
I had contemplated suicide. The only reason the conversation in my head never went farther than the first thought was because I knew what that would do to my daughter.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, I'm not doing that. I can't do that. So I got to figure something out. And so all I knew, my next step was stop smoking weed, because you got to go get a job, because for most jobs, you're going to need to urinate in a cup.
Yeah.
So I stopped smoking weed, and I was just like in my garage, and this is now over the summer, and I'm just cleaning up stuff in my garage because I wanted to keep my mind off of the fact that I just wanted to go smoke. And I remember I opened up this box of memories that I had, like, you know, nostalgic stuff in there.
Yeah.
And one of the things in the box was this old Bible promise book that I got when I graduated eighth grade. The church that we grew up in, shout out Gorham United Methodist Church, and whatever little old ladies I know it was that made sure that every graduate got a Bible promise book.
Yes.
Because I was one, and that Bible promise book is what the Lord used to grab a hold of my life.
Wow.
I knew I was looking for answers. A friend of mine had given me a book, What Should I Do With My Life? And I was even just reading that. I was like, I don't know. I don't know what's what. So I remember opening it, and I couldn't tell you what I read. I don't even remember a single verse that was in there. Yeah. But I know the Spirit of God, like, leapt off of the pages. And I felt in my spirit him saying, come home.
Yes.
And it was like one of those scenes from a movie where suddenly, like, all of these moments from your life are flashing before your eye. And like, I'm having all of the sins of my life, like, being brought up before, and I'm just repenting one after another. Oh Lord, forgive me of this, forgive me. Alone in my garage, I'm like on my knees, I'm like bawling and just repenting out loud. And I gave my life to the Lord that day. That was June 21st, 2008. And I remember in that moment that what I was convinced of was, so I'd already turned 30 at that point. I turned 30 on the 6th of June. And I was convinced in that moment that I had 30 years to do it my way.
Yeah.
Where I was the master.
Yeah.
Right? I thought I was the bomb. I knew it all. And this is where it led me to.
That's awesome.
This is where it led me to. And so I was convinced without a doubt that God could do a better job with my life. So I was like, you know what? Here's the keys. You're in charge. When I think I know what's right, but your word tells me something else, you're right and I'm wrong. Yep. And it makes it so much easier now, because there's so many things that, like, as we're going through life, we're just like, that doesn't feel right. I don't think that's right. Yeah. All of that used to be my guide.
Yeah.
That used to be the way that I led life, because that's the way that people naturally do.
Exactly.
You know, but then it became like, but wait a minute, but what does God say?
Does God say?
Yeah. And I had that memory of like, you remember what happened before.
Yeah.
This is where you went. So who's in charge? Are you the master again, or is he in charge? You know? And so that was the moment when it all shifted. And it took 6 months after that before I finally confessed to Larissa, because she didn't know that I was cheating on her.
Yeah.
She didn't know that I was high every single day.
Wow.
So I had 6 months of a new man where, like, I'd stopped smoking weed. I'd thrown out all of my porn collection. And like, it was a radical change, similar to what it sounded like you were describing when you were sharing your story.
Yes.
And I was a new guy. And I just remembered feeling like while we were good, there was still this lie between us, you know?
Yeah.
And the Lord convinced me that I needed to tell her. So I remember one day I told her, and she kicked me out of the house, told me to take Layla with me. And I went to my mom's house. And for like 3 days, we were down at my mom's house. And then It was about 3 days. I don't know for sure. Everything sounds like so, like 3 day epic. Like, yeah. I don't know for sure. You know, he rolls again in 3 days. But it was literally like a death and a resurrection in our marriage. Cause I felt like on that day, like I just gave us marital suicide because she had told me over and over again before that, you cheat on me, I'm leaving you. You cheat on me, I'm leaving you. And without anything other than the Lord prompting me, I'm now confessing that I've cheated on you.
Definitely the Lord's leading.
Right, because there's no other reason. No. Unless you're like trying to get out. Like you're trying to leave. You know? And yeah, so, but then she called me and was like, you know, I was talking to one of our good friends and she asked me just plainly, you know, do you still want to be married? And then Larissa said that her response to her was that the guy that I am now was the one that she wants to be married to. And I was like, you know, I'm starting to tear up.
I know, that's so beautiful.
And she said, you know, if you had told me all of that on day one, when you started walking with the Lord, I would have left. Yeah. And I was like, because she didn't see the new yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it would have just been words. Mm-hmm. But like she saw what God did in my life. She saw that there was a new man before her. And then the fact that like she didn't catch me in anything.
Yeah.
You know, it was like I was up against the wall and I had to confess.
Exactly.
So
brought that to her. I love that. I love that. How God, it was in the perfect timing.
Yeah.
Well, guys, that was the first half of our interview with Pastor Fury. It was so good and full of so much wisdom. So you're going to have to come back on October 2nd to catch the rest.
Yes.
Make sure you subscribe and hit the bell for notifications so you don't miss it.
Yeah. And we'll see y'all then. Mm-hmm.